Well, here's Habbo, and Darren is in the house, Frank Maloney. You know, the Hoos have a tough weekend, and Frank leaves the state.
Frank bails.
You know, I mean, you know, the basketball team goes down, the women's team, basketball team goes down, the lacrosse team loses in overtime, I think. Baseball loses two out of three. You know, we had to remove all sharp objects from the Hobgood house.
We've got some good news also. We're going to have a positive show.
Some positive news, and we really are going to have a good show. Friend of the program, Dan Bonner is going to join us shortly to break down the Sweet 16 for us and talk a little NCAA tournament. And then in the second half hour, we're going to have a little difference tonight. You know, Darren and I are going to discuss, and we're going to invite your comments and questions looking at the Virginia basketball program, where we have been and where we're going. And right now, before we go to Dan, we're going to tell you how you can follow the show.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Yeah, give us a call. So write this down. 804-345-0910. That's 804-345-0910 in the second half of the show. And help us out. Break down the year and next year for our basketball squad. Also, you can find us streaming live on foxsportsrichmond.com and thesaber.com. Download that free iHeartRadio app and listen on your smartphone when you're on the go. When you're on Facebook, check us out. Who's Talking on Facebook and request our weekly newsletter.
And our guest this evening, a good friend of the program, good friend of mine, just an absolutely great guy, the epitome of a student athlete back in the day at the University of Virginia, was a co-captain of the basketball team. And I was thinking, Dan, you know, I always talk about myself as the first basketball player cheerleader marriage. You were the first male captain that married a female captain, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, and I may be the first coach to marry the player, so there's that.
Well, I was trying to be kind, you know, but there's that too. But anyway, well, you did well in that regard, I must admit.
I did great in that regard. So that's the most successful part of my basketball career at Virginia.
Well, at least you have an achievement to talk about, so that's more than a lot of people, but... let's talk a little bit about the old Sweet 16 here. I know you were out in Tulsa. The two teams that emerged from that site are Baylor and Kansas. Talk a little bit about those two schools going forward.
Well, Jim, I was very impressed with both of those teams. They're obviously very different teams. Of course, both of them from the Big 12. But Kansas has one of the best freshman in the country and Josh Jackson, but they've got tremendous senior play as well, and Frank Mason, who will probably end up being the player of the year. And the key to them, Bill Self at Kansas has usually liked to play two big guys and three wings, if you will. But what he's got this year is he plays two point guards and he only plays one big guy. So Josh Jackson, who's about 6'6", 6'7", plays the four for them, and that's traditionally a much bigger guy. But Bill Self likes to play with two point guards, and that's what he has, Graham and Mason. And Jackson is just a transcendent talent, and particularly when Devontae Graham can hit perimeter jump shots, they become very, very good. So they played very well. I was impressed with them, but as we have seen throughout the season in college basketball, just because the team plays well one night doesn't mean they can repeat it the next night. And Baylor struggled a little bit. They did not play quite as well, but they've got great big guys. And their point guard is that Manu LeConte, you may remember. He played for a couple of years at Miami before he transferred. And he's got to score for them to be effective, and he struggled with that. But when they needed him in both games, he scored. So I think that they both have a chance. Baylor is playing in a region where nobody expected him to be, but it's, you know, Wisconsin, Florida, Baylor, and South Carolina. So I think Baylor has as good a chance in that region as anybody.
Yeah, we were, Darren and I were talking before we went on air. Those people that bought tickets for the regional at Madison Square Garden so that they could see Villanova and Duke are having a hard time unloading those tickets now, I guess. But speaking of Duke, there's several surprises. There always are in the NCAA tournament, but one surprise for people around here is 8 out of 9 ACC teams have been eliminated. Does that mean anything? I mean, most people thought the ACC was probably the best league in the country this year, but it hasn't proved that way in the tournament.
Jim, you know, I don't know what it means. I've always been of the opinion that you can't make a determination as to which league is the best league in the country until you know the tournament results. And now we do know the tournament results. And if my theory is accurate, and I'm not saying that it is, but it happens to be my theory, so I'll stick by it, that means that the ACC was not the best league in the country this year. And certainly it appears that it was not the best league in the history of college basketball, which a lot of folks around the ACC were maintaining that that was exactly the status that it had achieved. Obviously, it was very competitive, but clearly, with the possible exception of North Carolina, there were no elite teams. But it was a very solid season for the ACC, a rough, tough, competitive league, probably as competitive as it's ever been. But now, as we can see, when it stacks up against the other teams from other leagues, maybe not quite what we thought.
Yeah, it didn't do so well. And, of course, you know, Florida State and Virginia both lost by 25 and Miami lost by 20. So at least three of the teams got blown out, for lack of a better terminology. But, you know, back to the regionals, the one regional that I'm referring to as the banner regional, the one with North Carolina, Kentucky, UCLA, I didn't total them up, but there's, I think, 20-some national championships among those three schools, and somehow the Butler Bulldogs have gotten into that party. How do you break that group down?
Well, I think that's very interesting, Jim. Remember, early in the season, North Carolina and Kentucky actually played.
That's right.
And Kentucky won that game, and UCLA and Kentucky played, and UCLA won that game. So there are teams that have history with one another this year. I think that the folks from Atlanta and New York would very much like to have that be either UNC-UCLA or North Carolina-Kentucky matchup. That's what they're hoping for. They're hoping Butler does not rain on their parade. but we shall see. But I think that's obviously the most compelling region from the standpoint of just the marquee teams that are involved. The region where I'm going, the Midwest to Kansas City, I think that's very compelling because obviously Kansas is one of the top teams, and is there a better story left in the tournament possibly than Michigan? So I find that to be a very compelling reason and region. And then out in the West, that if you get to a Gonzaga-Arizona final, then that's a game that I think a lot of people have really been looking forward to see, just to see if Gonzaga can finally get to the Final Four.
Talk a little bit, we'll get to Gonzaga, but talk a little bit about Michigan. You know, obviously people know the story with the airplane incident, but how did the switch get turned on for the Wolverines and John Beilein?
You know, Jim, I think they just had a young team, first of all. Guys like Wagner and Wilson were still adjusting to the roles that they needed to play on the team, so that's one thing. But the major thing is Derek Walton decided that it was time. It was time for him to play. It was time for him to be a leader on that team. And, I mean, there's been article after article written about it that Walton is the key cog in that particular machine. And he's been playing as well as any guard in the country over the last 6-7 weeks of the season. So I think that the players getting some experience, going through a normal maturation process, becoming more comfortable with the increased roles that they had to play on the team this year, and finally Derek Walton just taking over and saying, okay, this is what we're doing, and this is how we're doing it, and this is what I'm going to do, and just leading the way, I think, has been the biggest factor for Michigan.
You know, how will they match up against Oregon? You know, Oregon's a team, plays on the West Coast. Those of us on the East Coast that go to bed at night probably don't see as many Oregon games as you might. So how do those teams match up against one another?
I think they match up pretty well. I think that, Oregon, remember Dana Altman is the coach out there, and he was very successful for many years at Creighton, and he's primarily a defensive coach. But in Dylan Brooks, they have one of the most talented players in the country. They guard you pretty well. And, you know, they're going to have to somehow figure out a way to run Michigan off that three-point line. And Louisville, of course, did that, and that didn't help them very much because the big kids, Wilson and Wagner, were able to score inside. So Michigan is playing very well right at the moment. I think that's a very intriguing matchup. I see it as a very even matchup. But I think that that should be a very, very interesting, fun, entertaining kind of up and down game.
And as you say, you're headed out to Kansas City. So Kansas, the University of Kansas, will, you would think, have a home court advantage out there to some degree. They're playing a Purdue team that is, well, of course, everybody's pretty good at this stage. There are no bad teams left. But Purdue certainly has had a good year, and you would think that's going to be a very competitive game as well.
Well, I'm looking forward to that one. Kansas, as I mentioned to you, they don't have the size that you normally associate with a Kansas team. And Purdue has tremendous size. Tom Izzo told a very funny story in talking about his team and their matchup against Purdue, when he was saying that he thought the one team in the Big Ten with which his team simply could not match up was Purdue because of Purdue's size. And he told a story about one of his kids, a walk-on, named Matt Van Dyke, who's about 6 feet five, goes about 205, 210 pounds, walk-on. But because they had so many injuries along the front line, Izzo was forced to start him in four games. And one of those games was against Purdue, and they were not playing very well. And Izzo looked out on the court, he says, one time, and saw that he only had four players on the court. And he was very upset with this, and he turned around to start yelling at his assistants, and then the Purdue center, Isaac Haas, moved, and Izzo realized that he did have five guys out on the court, but Van Dyke was standing behind Haas, and he couldn't see him. So obviously quite a bit of hyperbole there, but it was a very funny story and totally illustrative of the size that Purdue possesses. In Isaac Haas, in Caleb Swanigan, in Vince Edwards, they've got guys who are big. Haas is not the most athletic guy in the world, but Swanigan is. And so I just think that their size, and they're not quite as athletic as Kansas, but the athleticism isn't, the difference isn't that much. I think that'll be another very compelling matchup.
And well, Darren's got a question for you. Darren Franta. Go ahead, Darren.
Well, I was just going to say, it looks like you've got a nice draw out there in Kansas City, and three games that from equally matched opponents, good draw for you. But moving over to the West, I'm intrigued with that West Virginia and Gonzaga matchup, and I'd love to hear what you have to think about how those guys will go against each other.
Well, West Virginia, despite what they displayed in their last game, they usually struggle to score. They usually have to steal the ball from you to score effectively. And I know that they got up to the 10-0 lead against Notre Dame, and then the game was even the rest of the way. But West Virginia hit shots that normally they don't hit. So I think West Virginia has to force turnovers. I think Gonzaga is a team that handles the ball pretty well. And while these teams didn't play this year, they did play last year. They played in Morgantown, and Gonzaga won the game like 80-74. So, again, I think it's two teams that are a pretty good match. I would say that in this one, I don't see it as quite so even as I see these other games. I see Gonzaga with a little bit of an advantage. But if West Virginia, you know, can turn them over, then that changes the whole complexion of the game.
Well, just to touch all bases, Xavier, which comes in as the only double-digit seed.
11 seed
against Arizona. Do the Musketeers have a shot?
They do have a shot, and they have a shot mainly because they're playing well right at the moment. When people talk about the top programs in the country, nobody ever mentions Xavier. But this is like the sixth time that they've been in the Sweet 16 since 2008. Every time you turn around, they're playing for a berth in the Elite Eight or the Final Four. So they've got a very good program. They've overcome an awful lot of adversity with injuries. They lost their star point guard with an ACL injury, but they've won four of their last five games. They're playing pretty well right now, and they are as tough as you can possibly be. They are really, really hard-nosed kids, and I give them every chance in the world against Arizona. Arizona is more talented. Arizona has more offensive firepower, but I would not count out Xavier.
Hey, Dan, could you hang with us? We're going to take our first break now. I got a couple of more basketball general questions for you if you can hang through the break.
Sure, Jim.
All right, we're visiting with Dan Bonner. You're listening to Who's Talking. Stay tuned. We'll be back with Dan after these messages.